We're talking tonight about camp programming, and you've got notes in front of you, and we're talking about the need to plan. I've been to lots of camps, and because I'm in a camp and lecture on camping, I make it my business to sniff around, and I sort of feel, you know, we're all in the Lord's work, so why shouldn't I sniff? And talking to people, a lot of folks never really constructively plan. It just happens. Or they did plan a long time ago, and now they're simply just doing the same old thing. So planning removes the panic. If you plan ahead of time, it takes away the panic. And what are we going to do? You do this, you do that. Planning, I mean, there are lots of things we could have said. For instance, planning allows time to delegate. I remember when I first began to help in rally, I was 17 years of age and really just a kid and had just come back to the Lord and had a hopeless rally leader. He was fabulous with hobbies and that's where it stopped. And every night he'd come to me and say, oh Michael, would you run the games? Well, I would run a game, you know, sort of off the cuff. And then he'd begin and he'd say, oh look, he said, I haven't prepared devotions. Could you take devotions? Now they were just going to sit down. And God was very good. We'd sort of grab an idea and, you know, preach our socks off. And I obviously began to sort of take steer along. But he never delegated because he didn't think ahead of time. Planning considers people. And in everything we do, remember that people are more important than places. People are more important than programs. People are more important than things. It's people we're trying to win for the Lord. And planning makes room for ideas, for new ideas. It's amazing. You're sitting down with a group of people and somebody comes up with an idea and it begins to grow and develop and it's amazing where it leads to. And often, it's a very simple thing. Remember we had that saying on the screen last week, to fail to plan is to plan to fail. And if you fail to plan, then you're planning to fail. You're going to go down. Alright, the next one is communication. I'm assuming that you're either a camp director or manager, or you've been asked to run a children's camp for the holidays and you've got a group of people with you. But in some way or other, you're running a camp. Doesn't matter what sort of camp at the moment. One of the things that's important is sit down with those you're going to be working with. The Sunday school director, for instance. A Sunday school should have a teacher's meeting every month. Otherwise, in my book, it's not ticking over as it should be. All right? It's just not functioning. It's just messing about. And the director's job is to lead his teachers. If the director of the Sunday school leads his teachers, the teachers will lead the kids. But the director who will not have a teacher's meeting, and he calls all the shots and makes all the decisions, one, it's locked up into his particular range of ability, which may be very limited. Two, other people don't get involved. He doesn't delegate. Nothing new ever happens. So with your camping, try and sit down with, all right, if it's like us, we have a fixed staff. And when we're thinking of our children's camps, when I get back, one of the first things to do is to look at our May holiday camps. You know, what ideas have we got? What's going to be new? We pull out the folder from the last camp, but we did a debriefing on that, and we look at some of the mistakes that we made or an activity we ran, and it didn't go very well. All right, now was it the fault of the activity, or was it the way that we ran it? But work with your own people. There's a number of reasons for this. First of all, it includes them in the planning, obviously. They're part of the decision-making. So you all agree together to do it. And having agreed together to do it, then they're far more likely to want to do it. If you just say, well, we're going to do this, 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 and this, they say, oh, he never asked us. You know, he's just a one-man band, and oh, I might as just as well not be there. So it includes them in the planning, too. B, it gives them a sense of responsibility. Now, we talked last week about what gives the leader the right to lead. And it was the people that he leads, their dedication. So if their dedication is tops, it's piece cake. If their dedication is very weak, then his leadership is weak. He's got to use all the persuasion and charisma he can, and he's struggling. You know, would you mind doing this? It won't take you long, and I'll come and help you. Oh, that's so painful. Working with those kind of people. But if they're with you in the planning, first of all, they agree with what you're doing. But secondly, if they don't do it, so you're planning your May camps now, and you're a good month ahead, month and a bit, 6 weeks ahead. All right, and so Brad knows that he's got a particular job to do, and he knew it way in advance and doesn't do it. We can then say, well, now, buddy, what were you doing? You know, you've known all this time. So you build in an area of correction that also gives even the most junior member this sense of belonging. It's terribly important that no matter how junior a staff member may be, I mean, they haven't just joined this week, obviously, because that's silly, but they're a junior secretary, maybe in your camp, or they're just a junior leader, and this is their second time with you. It's very important that you try and build in some idea that they come up with. It may be a way, for instance, when our kids come to camp, they line up and there are three people, my wife in the middle, and she takes the registration. And there's obviously the name, age, address, phone number, any particular problems, illnesses, you know, bedwetting, epileptic fits and whatever, a contact phone number, all the usual things you'd have. So she's doing that, checking it off, and telling them how much they owe. There's a person on here taking their money, and they put a little stamp on it, and put what's owed, and what's, in other words, when the person comes, we've already worked out what they owe. So that's worked out. It's take this person here, puts the money and counts it carefully. This person takes their money and puts it in the bank. And we have a little bank bag, and it has a number on it and their name. So it's Bradley Scott, number one. All right, and that goes in the bag in that way. Yes, that was how it would work. And this was a problem, because we found that kids were stealing others' money, you see. A little creep like Rhonda comes along, see, she looks nice, but she's not nice. And she's smart, because she's been around. And so she comes to the bank the first day we open, and you know, there would possibly be $2,000 in that bank. That's a lot of money. What are these little bags? And so a kid comes along, and they're all queuing up, and they're all pushing and shoving. He says, right, are you kids? We're not going to open up until you're all quiet. And then they come along to get their money, and she'll give somebody else's name. And they, she takes somebody else's, she found somebody else's name, and says, I'm so-and-so, the person behind the bank doesn't know the first day who's who. There's a way we get over that too. Whenever you're handing change over, I will say, check it, and I will say, there you are. What's your name? Brad. Fine, Brad. There you are. You gave me $2, and there's 50 cents change. You will always remember the person. In our canteen, leaders won't listen to me, and a kid comes along, he looks as honest as the day, that's why they're good, and he hands in $2, and he gets the change for $2, everything was done right. He comes along about him and says, excuse me, Uncle Andrew, but I gave you $5, and you only gave me change for $2? And if you weren't concentrating, you can't remember. And of course, you've got to take, give him the benefit of the doubt. He just made $3 out of you and thinks you're an idiot. All right, an angel up there has just taken $3 off your account in heaven. All right, you've just gone two seats back. And the same with this money. So what we do now, we couldn't understand. How can we stop this? We would say, what's your name? Bradley Scott. Just a minute, here we are, Bradley Scott. There we are, Bradley. Fine. And use the name. That would help register. So this kid said, why don't they sign for it? Well, it's pretty simple. And so what they do, when they put their money in, when their mother is there, or when they come in, they sign their name on the sheet, and there's so much money, and the money's written on the bank bag. It goes into the bank. When it comes up for what's your name, Bradley, if you just like to sign, the kid signs for it, then goes away. When the bank comes back, we open the bag with the person there, tip it out, check it, say, right, oh, now what's there? There's $4.50 there. Okay, $4.50. And we write that on the bag, and it gets put back in. Because kids are funny. They've got $10, they go along to the canteen, and they spend $2. But they gave a $5 note over. So they spend the $2, they put the $3 in their pocket. Bring the bank bag back. In their mind, they've still got $8. There's $5 in the bank bag, $3 in their pocket. The next day when they come to get their bank bag, they've got another pair of jeans on. They look in the bag thinking, I've got $8. Somebody's nicked my $3. Now, getting this system is very easy. Some people have books that you sign, but I find that's a bit cluttered in the canteen when you're trying to put 250 kids on the first day. But a junior person sort of said, I'd like to give that a go. And so it's just an idea. I've taken a lot of time. But it gives that junior person, as well as anybody else, a sense of belonging. That crowd are prepared to listen to my ideas, and that's important. Also, it uses greater resources. You use other people's creativity. And there are some that say, I can do that. And they're just built for it. You know, they know exactly what to do, and you extend their creativity in lots and lots of ways. our points board, we just had a points board of lots of suns and moons and rocket ships going to it, you see. Well, it's been like this for about 8 years, and it's getting a bit tattered. And one girl said, I will give you a new points board. It's magnificent. It's a little Roman chariot, and it's got the Colosseum in the middle of it, and it's got Trajan's Arch, and it's all the ruins of Rome. Amazing. And then you finally, the chariot with the horses galloping on, his little chariot. And she did it. We gave her the board, she took it home, she painted it. It is beautiful. And we sort of wrap it up. You know, we only put it up for our children's camps. But this person, every time she comes along to camp, she doesn't say, that's my board, but she thinks, oh, that's my board. And it just gives a little sense of belonging. You want all your team, your staff, your leaders, to feel they belong and their ideas are at least listened to. One of the worst things of being in the job that I'm in and some of you are in is having to listen to boring people. And this has been no exception. Not with you, but in so many places I've been to, and I was at a place the other night, I was so mad because the two people I knew wanted to talk to me, and I have this clot waffling on, and you sort of have to look in and say, is that right? Goodness me, well, you surprised me. Is that so? Oh, you don't say things like, could you say more about that? You say, well, fancy that. Well, never mind, brother. You know, we've all got our problems and we'll meet in heaven. And you try and get rid of the guy. The time, you can't, if you brush the guy off, you've just made an enemy. And we're not here to do that. We're here to help people. He needs someone to talk to. Tragedy is, it was me. And sometimes you listen to people. But once you turn it, have you ever been talking to somebody and they're looking over there and they're not listening to you? Or they're looking at their notes and they're not listening to you? Or they look at their watch and you know you haven't got their attention? You get annoyed. What I do at home, in my office, when a person comes in, no matter who it is, they come in, and they say, Malcolm, can I see you for a minute? I say, yes, sure, just a minute, let me finish this word. Okay, and then I pick up my notes like that on my study desk, and I put them to one side, and say, right, now, you've got me. What's your problem? I have shifted everything off my desk, and they know they've got my attention. Now, sometimes they say, look, I'm awfully sorry, can we brief? Can we keep it to a quarter of an hour? But I don't have my stuff on my desk. And while they're talking to me, be sort of saying, oh, is that right? Yeah. Yeah, good God. So look, yeah. Oh, what was that? Oh, goodness me. And it's your Aunt Agatha died. Oh, sorry, it was your uncle, George. I see. You've lost that person. You must be interested. And you do this, and I'll have to take my glasses off. And you, is that right? And use your eyes. Is that right? Goodness me. Fancy that. Yes, I remember you. Hello. You know, you remember the face anyway. I remember faces, you know, I have nightmares. I see you every night. Alright, but you've got to let people believe, and you've got to be honest, this isn't an ad, that they care with you. That's what I'm trying to say there. Alright, when you're planning, think of your camp philosophy. Check out, what was the purpose of this camp in the first place? Make sure you're still within the bounds of the original vision. And this will keep you on track. Sometimes we have an idea. It's a good idea. We are going to reach teenagers for Christ. And that's our purpose. In the May holidays, we're going to reach teenagers. Well, that's tough. Hard work. You didn't get sufficient leaders. You're at 3 o'clock at night still putting the beggars to bed. They broke the jigger. They broke the trike. They smashed this. And it was a deadly camp, and you don't know that anybody got saved. So next time you're planning your camp, you don't like to think about it. You forget that your aim was to reach teenagers. And so you opt out for something easier. Let's reach little kids. The reason, and be careful, because I spend a lot of time with children, so I'm not criticizing it. The reason some people, and the reason some churches, only work with children, is because they do not have the spiritual maturity to confront adults with the gospel. They're not mature enough. And so they mess around with kids. Now, I work with children. And I'm not saying that's a bad ministry, or if people that work with children are mature, but that's the reason some people work with children. So your original aim that you really believed in was to reach teenagers. It didn't work. Now you've got to come right back to the drawing board and say, why didn't it work? It was a good idea. We had the teenagers. We just didn't have the staff. So you start with your staff. I don't know what we'd have. I'd have to ask you. But I think we've got about 500 and something, comes and goes a bit, leaders that we can call on a register that we would write to. And we would have about 8 what we call camp mothers, or rather special people. These are for our holiday camps. And we would you know, send forms out and write to them and get them there. And we're pretty selective. Teenage camps, you need people like we've got here. You can't have some bit of a kid wet behind the ears that's going to go down. You've got to have people that know where they're going and are pretty mature. And camp mother's got to be unshockable and pretty mature. So maybe the idea was good. The execution of the idea was a problem. Don't take the easy way out. Look at why did we build this camp? Now, we said last time in our leadership rush that we have, you often have to rearrange your philosophy. Maybe what you were after years ago has long gone by the board. It is no longer relevant. It's had it. We no longer need to do that. All right? I'm not suggesting you shouldn't change, but know why you're changing. You're not just copying out of it. All right, come down to duration. The next thing when you're thinking of planning, how long is the camp going to last? 5 to 7 days is a good length of time. We usually have 3 camps in a row, 2:50 go out at 10 o'clock, 2:50 come in at 10 o'clock, and so on. We allow a child to stay for 2 camps, never 3. We do their washing and for them so they start fresh. The overstayers, as we call them, are nearly always the problem. They're the ones that are homesick, they're the ones that are tired. It's the same run of camp. Often some of the leaders are the same. Certainly I'm the same, and my camp CODAT, maybe another staff member, but we're the same in the program, and the chef is the same. The whole mechanism is the same, but they've lost their leaders, they've lost their buddies, they've got a new leader in a different cabin. They're tired. And I want to talk about tiredness and exhaustion, so don't let me forget that. That's a tremendously important thing. But I would say 5 to 7 days is a good idea. So think about the age of campers. If they're little children, you're running a junior camp of 8 and 9 year olds. Now you've got to think very carefully, because those little children probably at home get up maybe 7:30. They go to school, and school is a very normal, balanced experience. They've been going to school now for quite a while, and it's no longer a nervous problem to them. They're happy at school. They have playtime and so on. They come home at 3:30. And the first thing they do, which is right to do, and if ever you run an after-school adventure time, you must always give the kids a drink and a biscuit. Because when they come home from school, they need something to eat. They need sustenance. And so they go and they raid and they get the biscuits out and they get the drink out and they sit down in front of television and they relax. And sometimes they do that till 5 o'clock, and then there's the tea, and it's very pleasant, and they're very safe at home. There's no excitement. Dad's dad, mum's mum, the dog's the dog, you know, and life's just normal. And then they plop down and do a bit of homework, but they're home. There is no tension. There's no exhaustion of there's no psychological exhaustion. All right? There's no exhaustion of nervous energy. When they come to camp, they hurl themselves into that 7 o'clock. They're tearing throughout the day, rushing from this to that, pushing each other out, challenging here, cheering here, getting excited here. Even meal times are an adventure. And then they're into the afternoon, in for dinner, out again, chapel time, they're sitting down, off. And it's not until 9 o'clock at night that they actually go to bed and they go zonk. And you do that day after day, you have all sorts of problems. So you've got to think, hang on, we've got these little kids. We must work out our program. You've got teenage kids. That's a very different program. Now, a mistake a lot of people make, they make the transition in their mind from junior children to senior children, but they don't make the transition in regard to their attitude. I did another school today, like I did at Oakley, as I did at Richmond, wherever it was. I was at Regent today. And I had these different classes. The first was a junior class. And my behaviour to them was, we had a lot of fun and some laughs, and we teased them a little bit, and the message I gave to them was very simple. And then I finished up with the senior group. And you have a complete change. In fact, the other one I did last week when I came here, done it, I had some very little kids, the junior, most junior children in the class first, and then I went from them to the senior, the 17, 18-year-old kids. And your mental adjustment was whoops! And your whole attitude was different, your language was different, your behavior was different, your humor was different, your concepts were different, the way that you put your sentences together was different. Now, some people have an adult program, but they treat teenagers like little kids still. They talk down to them. Now, we've all had people talk down to us, and we don't like it. And teenagers rebel against that, being talked down to. There's a skill somehow in being one with teenagers where they're your buddies and yet you've still kept them at arm's length. So when you say, you know, shut up, bed, or something like that, they haven't got so close that you can no longer have that little edge of leadership. And that's a very, very skillful line. Now, some people do it quite naturally. Others never get it right. They just fool around and clam around too much, and then when they want discipline, they cabin at night, they've made a fool of themselves. Having fun with kids is not making an idiot of yourself, where you go down in their estimation. You still keep their respect. You never lose their respect. So, the age. Considering the activities that you're going to have, and going down the list, and what you're looking for in those activities is two things. One, variety. And two, something a little different. So in our camp, because we don't have lakes and things, and so we work in three-quarter hour modules. We actually work, we work in a three-quarter hour module, and we have a quarter of an hour changeover, so that's a one-hour thing. Now, you might have this team and that team maybe playing soccer. Now, that's okay, that's not too bad, but not everybody in the team will want to play soccer. But they've all got to go. Everybody plays. And the thing is, you don't like soccer? Well, I'm sorry for you, buddy. You're going to have to learn in this life. You can't just do as you like. Soccer. Netball. Now, supposing this team here are playing soccer, we would not make their next activity hockey. They've got two games very, very similar. If we thought, and I would get to know pretty quickly, because we have a little card that we give to our leaders. Let me just go through this quickly. I think it's of help. We talked about when the kids arrive and we take the leaders' meeting. Remember, the very first day we were together, have a little notebook. Remember, they go to the back of the notebook and they write the name and age, all that. Well, they also have a little card, and the card's got all their activities on, about 30 different activities, like hockey, soccer, softball, archery, shooting, horses, swimming, netball. And they have a card with all the activities on. Now, there are some activities that they're going to have to do anyway. Everybody, all the guys are going to play a game of soccer, all the girls are going to play a game of netball. Because they need to do that, I want it for the point system. But I make that they tick in what they like, and so they'd say, well, 8 out of our team like netball, that means I've got 2 kids that don't. Well, that's pretty good. Then the go-kart, little junior girls don't want to ride the go-kart. And lots of little junior kids, 10-year-old girls, that I wouldn't give you a thank you for a go-kart. So, you know, they put a line to that. So I'll put them on something else that they'll like. We have a slave train, which is one of my ideas, and it's a lot of fun. And a lot of kids like it, though. They're scared stiff of the thing. You've got to be careful if you lead it. So you might go from something like soccer, you might go to go-kart, which will be quite acceptable. If these people here have had horses, that's a very popular one. All right, we might then go down to something like abseiling. Now, there's a weakness there because they're both activities that you don't have to be busy in. So we might go horses to soccer, but you make sure there's a variety through the day so at least every child has done one activity that they really wanted to do. And that's so very, very important. It's quite complex working it out, quite a system. All right? So you think of the activities. Then the costs. And are these children going to be able to afford this? We're working in a housing area. That doesn't mean to say that there isn't much money. There usually is because they're paying a low rent for their government house and they spend all on booze. But, you know, are these people going to be able to afford it? Do we need to work something else out? And what I sometimes do is if I find that lots of children coming that I know can't afford it, because Spencer said, I leg around Lions, Kiwanis, Rotary, various churches, evangelical churches, and say there are people coming from your district, how about paying the fee? I try not to let the camp pay the fee unless we have to, but we never turn anybody away because they can't afford it. Alright, what leaders have you got? And it's very important before you set the number of kids you're going to have in your camp to make sure you've got enough leaders. Now, I've been to lots of things where the place is pouring over with kids. I visited a camp a while ago, not in Australia, and they had 300 teenagers, they had 5 leaders. That was ridiculous. That was, you know, absolute disaster around the corner. They were in the bush having it off. They were smoking over here. They brought booze in over there. There was no control. And the guy running it was absolutely had it. He was dead. Now, that's dumb. He got all the kids. Anybody can get kids. That's not the problem. The problem is to get quality leaders. So you've got to make sure you've got the right number of leaders. You've got to have your leaders. And that is terribly important. So you look at your leaders. very carefully. And what I do, I have a little card system, and at the end of every camp, I write a brief remark about leaders. Often a leader will come to camp. This camp, he's terrific. First camp, proving himself. Next camp, a disaster. And I might write him a note or take him aside and say, in the last camp you were fabulous. Quite frankly, you know, this camp, Brad, you were a pain in the neck. I don't know why. You've got a problem. You know? And I'd be very honest and try and talk to him. I would do it very personally and very quietly, but, you know, just let him know that he's a disaster. And because he needs to know, he says, oh, yeah, well, you know. And there's usually some reason for it. So know your leaders. And then the accessibility of your camp. I'm thinking about the adventure-bound type. Can we get there? See, we have a horse camp that's on a horse station just away from us, or a sheep station, rather, and we've got to make sure we can get all the horses there. A lot of people can't get the horses there, so they bring them to us, and we float them over in trucks, and we charge them for the privilege. All right, now the type of camp, when you're thinking of planning. The people that you intend to reach, who are you really after? It's very difficult to try and reach everybody. So you've got to settle for that's what we're really after. All right? So consider one. So here we go. Are we after salvation? That's the real purpose of this camp, is to get people saved. Or is it discipleship, Christian growth, family involvement? Is the church camp coming in for the weekend? Lots of camps come in. I'll say to them, well, I see I've got your program here, but just to help us, so we can help you, what's your aim this weekend? You know, why have you come to Church Springs? And what do you hope to accomplish? When you go home, what do you, you know, want to have happened? Oh, I wouldn't have a clue. And time and again that happens to camps come in and say, well, you know, well, what sort of people have you got here? You know, what do you want me to do? What's your aim? And this is what I asked the people at Belrose when they came. I said, now, you haven't given me a subject, but what do you hope to have happened when you go home? What do you want to have happened? And the guy said, well, and that, and he has some ideas what he'd like to have happened. But it's very important that, you know, what are we trying to do? We're involved in a Bible conference. Well, that's very different. Or a sports camp. We run one of those with 800 kids. That's a very, very highly organized camp. We start at 5:30 in the morning under floodlights, just. And we finish, well, we blew it this time, and we finished about, oh, 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. They're tired. They're begging for devotions. Please, can we sit down? And then Sunday's a very busy day. We don't play any blood sports on Sunday like rugby, but we have our swimming, and we have our athletics, and we get into our croquet, and we do a lot of table tennis and that kind of thing. Archery's done that day, shooting, clay shooting, 22, and all that kind of thing that isn't so sort of rugged. And then Monday is a very, very busy day, and we finish at 3 o'clock with our presentation of trophies. But you think about the camp, and our problem in that camp is not getting the kids. We've got a list of teams that want to come. We only take 16, 45 to 50 a team. That's not the problem. The problem is getting referees good enough. And I scour New Zealand to get top quality referees because these kids are good. These groups that come, they start training somewhere around about, you know, August. And some of them play in a sport themselves. Some churches join a football club to be a witness. And when they come, they're good, and you've got to have a good top line referee. So you have to think ahead. Goals. How are we going to reach our purpose? And remember the cycle we had. You need a purpose, you have goals, then plans so you can act. And look at your plans to change so you can act again to reach your goal, to reassess what you've done, to reach your purpose. So you need some definite goals. And then planning. And that's the specifics. And lots of people will not sit down and work out the details. You know, what have we got for this? What have we got for that? You're going on an adventure-bound camp. So you're going on a canoe camp. We're in the Bay of Islands. I don't know much down here. But you're really in the sea. You've got lots of problems. You've got currents versus winds. So you've got currents going this way and you've got winds going that way. You've got canoes. You're away from the shore. You can have offshore breezes that blow up in about 10 minutes and you've got a tremendous swell on. I've been in waves that have been over 6 feet. Alright, you've got a spray deck on, but you've got to be good. Now what are we going to do about food? What are we going to do about sickness? Now what are we going to do? You can trust God, but you have to work the fine details out. What's going to happen here? Think it through. And that takes time. And usually it's, if I can say this, uninterrupted time when you can really think. You can't have people dashing in at your office or dashing out, answering the phone and zipping here and there. I am not available. So you need to apply yourself to details. Alright, that brings us to the specifics. We talked about this earlier, and we'll double up a lot as we go through, because I'm hoping that no matter what heading you look at, we've dealt with the most important things under it. How many are we going to cater for? Well, we've talked about numbers, leaders rather. That's the first thing. What leaders have we got? Because it's silly having more people than we've got leaders to cope. That's ridiculous. you'll do more damage than good. Remember, the problem is not to make bad kids good. That's one of our jobs. Our other job is to make sure that good kids don't go home bad. And if you have a lot of bad kids and poor leadership, a lot of good kids that have been protected in their home and environment, and they come to camp and they're with these kids that go for smoke around the back and they're talking about sex and morality and they're pretty filthy, these good kids go home bad. So you've got to make sure that you don't just make bad kids good, but you don't let good kids go home bad. We ran, and I had the joy of being very much involved with it, things that Wynnum did a little while after us, and that was these Sunday night drift-in things. They were called drift-in, flop-in, call-in, and all sorts of things that we ran. We called Down to the Grotto. And we put scrim all over the place, and we had little lights, and we had a band strumming it out. We had all these teenagers, pretty grotty bunch. They all had to leave their booze outside. And we would have sometimes 300-400 people. And I used to have a few chakarataras of the biggest elders I could find, and the most expendable. And they would just stand in the shadows, you see. And then we would preach like mad. Now, what happened in some of those things, we deliberately encouraged the bad elements. That's what we were after. The whole thing was geared for that. You know, dark, the place was dark, like going into a cave. It was called a grotto. It was dark. Scrim was bad, by the way. So one church did it, and somebody set fire to it, and the scrim just went woof, just as like a... And then they didn't lose any lives, but they were very close. But we went to logic takers, all sat there to put this together. And then all these kids come in, teenagers pour in. And a lot of them were bad kids. And a lot of them got saved. We had a lot of kids saved. And that was the year when our youth group went from 6 to over 70 in just a few months. A lot of those were the kids. But in some churches, they didn't have the discipline we were fortunate enough to have in the support of our elders. And when these kids came in with their leather jackets and saw girls, and you see, the ungodly guy likes a Christian girl. Now, you have to remember that in your youth work. A guy that's a slob, he knows the girls that he's going with are proper little bitches, and he knows what they're like. He knows they've slept around with every Tom, Dick, and Harry. He knows they're filthy. He knows they're dirty. He knows they're immoral. He knows what they're like. He knows them. But when he comes into our environment, he sees a girl who is clean and nice and different. Now, he might try and be funny, but she is a tremendous attraction to him. She is so far above the sluts he's been mucking about with. And he will set himself level best to get that girl. Now, that girl just may have a real weakness there herself. She may have lots of immoral tendencies, and it's only her environment that's kept her going straight. And this great big tough guy muscles up alongside her, and she thinks it's terrific, and she gives a little nervous giggle. And before she knows where she is, they've swapped phone numbers. He rings the next day, and she's out with him, and you've lost her. And the church elders say, "Right, close it down, my daughter's just gone bad because you brought those toughs in." And he's right. And his daughter's down the street and he never ever wins her back again. And you're to blame. Are you? Doesn't say much for his control in the house. I mean, there's a lot of other things to it, but initially, on the surface, you blew it. You brought them in. I entrusted my daughter to you. You didn't look after her. She was exposed to this and I lost her. If you'd have never had that stupid Sunday night thing you used to run, I'd still have my daughter in my home today. Now, this was the cry that went around a lot of these things in Auckland that tried to copy the initial one that was run very well. We copied the initial one very carefully. The one that was obviously really best of God. Others tried to do it, but they didn't put the work in. And they lost a lot of their good young people. Now, at a camp, it's just the same. You know, you have all sorts of kids. And a guy lines up with a girl and he's got 5 days to do it. And you've got to have the right kind of leadership. Now, all you want is a kid to go home from your camp pregnant. And you're in all sorts of trouble. You know, parents, "But I thought I was sending my kid to a Christian camp, but look what happened, she's pregnant. Why, where's your supervision?" Now, if you've got nearly 300 kids and 5 leaders, well, then you're an idiot. Period. All right, so it's important that you think leaders. How big is the camp and the camp facilities? It's no use overstacking the camp. It's built for 30. Okay, the most you're going to fit in is 35 maybe if you've got tents. But what about the toilet facilities, the washing facilities, the eating facilities, cleaning facilities? All those things need to be considered. Don't just boast and brag and pile more in. Once again, you're back, as you think about numbers, the purpose. See, we have 250, and I get a lot of criticism from other camps. "Camp's far too big." See, I have criticism about churches. And the Brethren have got a concept, those of you who go in the Brethren Church, that no Brethren Church will be more than 60. Now, they're usually rather small-minded people that have never thought it through. They're nice people. And we'll probably have sit next to them in heaven. But that's pity. They want a church of 60. Because their argument is, I mean, you know everybody when you've got a church of 60. Well, that's nice. But suppose you've got a church of 1,000. You can still know 60 people. You still know 60 people. So what's the difference? The difference is you've got a great big church, and if you want to take Sydney on with 2,000, 3,000 people, you can do it. You've got gift, leadership, ability, administration, art, singing, drama. Whoops, you've got it there. For these struggling odds in a Baptist church today are 40 strong and a beautiful church. What can 40 people do in a place like Sydney? Well, they can do it in the power of God. Don't let's limit God. But think of all the effort. You know, one guy's got to be about six things. And it's a problem. I was in a church a while ago preaching, not here, in the north of New Zealand, had a little pedal organ. And the lady came from the Methodist church to play the organ for the brethren at night because she fitted them and they didn't have a church service. She's very old. And I gave out a hymn. She said, I'm sorry, I can't play that. So I said, oh, all right. What about number so-and-so? Can you play that? No. All right, no. Well, you choose. So she chose the hymn. And I said, okay, righto, we'll sing this hymn. She said, I can't, I haven't got the strength to pump it more than two verses. So, because she's a pedal thing, you see, so you have the first and second. It was a little tiny church. I suggested that that guy over there gets down there and he pedals it and she plays it, we'll sing the whole lot. But it didn't go down very well. But they were just a little tiny church. And they had a whole town to win. You know, when you go to some of these big churches, they don't need to combine with other churches. If they want to run a Louis Palau crusade, they run it. Bang. But these little tiny churches, you can do it, but think it through. So, the point is that we break our camp down. You say, your camps are too big, 250, you can't possibly know them. It isn't my job to know them. My job is not to know 250 boys and girls. That is not my job. My job is that I've got leaders. I've got 36 leaders, two leaders for every 10 kids. My job is to know my leaders. And my job is to lead my leaders, and my leaders will lead the kids. So you've got 250 kids down in little modules of 1 to 5. Or we can't always get a cadet leader, and it might be 1 to 10, but that's the maximum, 1 to 11. That's not a bad size. So you could do that for a million people. Your ratio is still 1 to 5. That one person only has to know 5 people or 10 people. That's not too big. Why should I have to know everybody? I was in this Christian school today, there's 450 at it. I was impressed by the way that the headmaster showed me around. He knew so many of the kids. And I said, I'm impressed that you know that. I said, I don't teach in here now, I'm really just administration. And I just know a few. So I've been lucky, the ones that we've met, I've known. He said, I just see them in assembly like you've been to in chapel time when we have visitors like you do. But he says, of course, my job is to lead my teachers. And he was right. That's his job. And the leader of a camp that spends all his time hooning around looking after the kids and ignores his leaders will have a shambles on his head. My job's to inspire them. Now, in regard to this, and I didn't bring any gear with me because I have that much stuff to bring for various bits and pieces, I have a folder, and you forgive when I say I, but I have a folder like that. On the front it has the main program of camp, who's on chapel time, who's on memory verse, who's on prayer for each day. That's on the front. Every leader's got this. And then it's got who's on the canteen, who's on the bookshop, who's on registration, who's on bank and, you know, bus, getting the transport. And then it's who's on the aviary, who's, well, I know who the kitchen are, but I put the names there so that all the leaders that just arrived to help in camp know what everybody else is doing. Who's the mechanic, who's driving the fire engine, who's doing this, who's doing that, who's on horses and so on. And it's all written down. And everybody's got, and I glue mine on the front so I know at a glance, I know exactly who hasn't shut the gate. Right, that guy there. Inside I have a program of everybody's activities. So all the activities go down here, and what they're all doing goes there. All right, that doesn't make sense to you. But on the back is what I'm trying to get to. I have a list of all the leaders. So it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 girls. There are 9 cabins of girls. There are 9 cabins of boys. And alongside are the cadet leaders. So I've got all my leaders. I've got page after page after page. So when you sit down to work something out, you sit down with your pen, and you're working out, now who's going to do this? Right, well, he's a good leader, so he'll go first. So I crop a line through that one, put his name down. Yep, that's just cadet leader's job. Okay, he'll do that. And you put a line through them. So you don't make mistakes. And you say, hang on, there's one leader they haven't got a job for. He's going to be upset. So I'll make a job. And I'll make a job. Now, I don't need it, but I just make a job. Because when you hand the sheet out the next morning, they say, excuse me, Malcolm, but I haven't got a job. you know, you're doing a cookout or something like that. Everybody else got a job, but there's one person. Now, they don't need it, and they don't see it that way. They feel, you've given everybody else a job, but not me. So I create jobs that everybody's got a job. And everybody feels needed. And then when I've done that, I tear that sheet up, screw it up, and when I've got a clean sheet for the next time. And I carry that pad with me all the time. You know, and so that I know my leaders. And you've got to know that your job is to know your leaders. Know them, understand them, their weaknesses, their strengths, who to put with who. All right, we're going canoeing down the stream. Okay, well, I would put a new leader with a very experienced leader. All right, so if Rhonda had been to our camp many, many times, she knows canoeing, she knows that you go down there, that the tractor will be taken down by one of our staff. Everybody wears a life jacket. We don't wear helmets, but we wear life jackets, sure. And where we start, where we finish, the boundary, she knows that. She's a tough little cookie. She'll make sure that that happens. And then I would give him maybe someone like John, who's never been to our camp before. And he'll be the strong one, but he's new. She's going to be the one that knows what to do. So she will break him in. Well, next time round, he'll take somebody. Now, it's just a matter of planning. And things just don't happen. It's all done. And you only draw leaders that want things to go right. All right, once again, the age of the campers. Consider their age, their sex, you co-ed. And I would suggest co-ed is far better than single-sex camps. The social background, where do they come from? We talked about that last week. And the spiritual contact that they may have had. Have these kids, do they go to rally? Where have they been to? All right, so get some idea of that. They know nothing at all about God. You're starting right from scratch. Well, we run one or two camps. We have had camps like that. And we use the same Bible. In fact, follow-up provides us with Bibles. It's a Good News Bible. The little grey one, you know, and with a little newspaper stuff on the front. And everybody has one of those Bibles, and we would say, turn to page 347, and everybody turns to that page. You'll notice that we're in the Gospel of John, whatever it is, you see. Okay, and then you've got to start right from basics. But if you're dealing with kids that have been to rally and know so much, well, you start from there, and you plan accordingly. You plan your talks accordingly. All right, establish. You're going to an established campsite. That needs to be considered. So it's a campsite like Tukley. All right, which is a very excellent camp. Now, what you want to know is, what does it cost to go there? That's the first thing. What does it cost us? I'm now thinking that you are taking a camp. You are taking your youth group there. You're taking a family group. You're taking a rally group. Okay, what does it cost us to go? What do we get for our money? What do we get for it? Are meals all catered for? Yep. What about morning and afternoon tea? Yep. What about supper? Yep. Fine. Is fruit provided? No, can't afford fruit. Okay, we'll bring our own. But we just want to know what we're getting. So that's important. What do we get for our money? Now, what facilities are there? What about eating? Now, we're going to be bringing 300 people. Can we all sit together and eat? No, not really. We couldn't get you all in. Someone would have to be there, someone would have to be here. All right? That may be a question. What about all being together? We want to do square dancing at night. Now, have you got a place to do that? Because we've got a caller coming. No, I'm sorry, we wouldn't have anywhere big enough to do that. Okay, well, no, that don't get your caller and all your square dancing all set to go. And then suddenly find there's any way to do it that's adequate for the number of people you've got. What about recreation equipment? For instance, we have to provide, if you want to play soccer, well, there's a soccer ball, we don't provide boots and legs, but we just provide a soccer ball and whistle, and the goalposts are up, and there are nets on the post. The better your facilities, the better the game. You just throw a couple of jumpers there, the game won't be as good as if you've got the goalposts up and nets on it. When we play croquet, it's all marked out carefully, and the whole thing's done, and croquet's a fabulous game, it's a lot of fun. Indoor basketball, every playing field is carefully marked out and properly done. And, one of our staff, we're happy to referee it for you, if you like. We'll referee the thing. I made a mistake. I thought it was, we're not covered eight. Never mind, we'll just go a minute longer. But you want to know what equipment's there. You want to play hockey, for instance. All right, well, we provide hockey sticks and a hockey ball. But there's a cost there, and we tell them this. Whatever you lose, you pay replacement value. So you get a grotty soccer ball and lose it, you pay $70 for a new one. Now, we keep our sports gear pretty good, because when the soccer ball gets, worn out, I hide it. No, not really. But they've got to know that, because if they don't know they've got to replace it, they just couldn't care less. Everything that they take, we've got what we call the outer court, the inner sanctuary, and they go into the outer court, where there are two benches, and I go into the inner sanctuary, open the double doors, and say to the guy, now what do you want? You want hockey? Okay, there's the hockey gear, and I trundle that out. 1, 2, 3, 4, while they're all in the rack here, you've got your 24 sticks there. That's a couple of spares. There are two balls down there, there's pads. Yep, you've got everything there. Yep, that's right. Okay, hockey gear. You have any tennis rackets? Right. And tick that off. And everything he gets is ticked off. And I say, righto, Timbuktu Baptist Church, okay, would you just sign here, please, and what's your name? Right. And it just says, I accept responsibility for this gear. And then I lock the inner sanctuary, spin the little combination lock, make sure he didn't see it, and then give him the key to the outer court. He's responsible, then look after that room all the way through camp. That's his problem. They want gear, they go to him, not me. Don't chase me around all day long. But at the end of camp, I get him together, and I open the hockey gear up, there's a hockey stick missing. $30. Do you want to go and look for it? Soccer ball missing. There's one hockey ball missing. Whoops, there's a pad there torn. So we're going to have that signed up. Now, if they're paying you $3,000, I'm not too fussy. I'd want a soccer ball bag. We've got 14 skateboards there, and look, that one there's wrecked. And they were all fixed because they're all checked every Friday. Every bit of equipment has gone through carefully on a Friday. And so I know that that skateboard, when you got it, was in perfect condition. Now it's broken. And they're $1.50 for the bearings, and there's 8 on a skateboard. So, sorry, I didn't know about that. The guy seems to be very nice. I'm not nasty. I look nasty. I'm a nice guy. And then we'll say, well, look, you've got $100 worth of gear out here, and you wouldn't want us to be out of pocket. I tell you what, go and have a look and see what you can do, and that'll be fine. And he'll go, and he'll find the soccer ball. If he's got a place there, he'll find it. He'll turn the camp inside out, he finds it. But if he doesn't have to pay for it, he won't bother. Oh, it's over there somewhere, Mel. And we have sometimes staff that are a bit careless. It's amazing what gets damaged. We play badminton, for instance. Those rackets are very, some clock was trying to hit the soccer ball with a badminton racket. No wonder it got busted. And they're expensive rackets. And that one's broken. Well, I'm sorry, you have to replace that. And he knew that when he signed the deal. We give free table tennis balls out a day. After that, they buy them. Because kids are selfish. They put them in their pocket so they can play whenever they want to play and bust anybody else. So there are three provided every morning. The three table tennis balls go out. After that, they buy their own. And he knows that. So sleeping, other pillows provided. What about wet weather? Supposing the weekend it pours like mad, what a program have you got? Because you want to know what sort of program there is. What about your sound system? For instance, let's take square dancing. Now, if your church doesn't agree with square dancing, you call it square gymnastics. It doesn't matter. And we have to have a cordless mic. Those little radio mics, which is fine. And you need it if you're doing square dancing, because the caller needs to walk around the ground. And you can go anywhere you like in our auditorium with this on. In fact, I have the cordless mic in my study when I'm doing the changeovers. And I can just pick it up, turn it on, because it's all switched on. So, okay, everybody, it's time to come in now. It's just 3:30. Everybody in team line, let's move. And I'm still sitting in my study, you see. And then I walk across to everybody else. How did you do that? I never let them know. That's the kids. All right, but what about an overhead projector? One that works. And first aid is important. Let me just finish this, and then we'll go and have a drink. Hidden costs. Family camps, that's the weekend camps, there are no hidden costs at all except breakages. For school groups, they pay $7 an hour for go-karts, $2 an hour per BMX bike, and that's all. But I was speaking for a group a while ago. We went to another camp, and the people were very upset. The guy said, do you want the horses? I said, oh, we'd love the horses, thanks. Yeah, fine. Pretty well, they'll be in the corral. So we had horses. Well, when we'd finished with the horses, we just left them there. We didn't say we'd finished the horses. And they got a bill. It was $20 an hour for the horses. And but they got charged the whole afternoon, from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Only a few kids rode them for about half an hour. But the thing that really upset the apple cart, and this camp was dumb, they put a pile of plates there to count the numbers. Now, we don't do that. We ask how many you've got. Some camps are hopeless. They don't even know how many they had when they leave. We say, how many people you've got? Oh, I wouldn't know, Malcolm. About 120, 130. I said, that's close enough, But for breakfast tomorrow, we will cook for 130. We'll charge you for 130, okay? So by lunchtime, you'll have to let us know. We still don't let us know. And so I go and count them. And I said, let's count them. You have a little clicker thing if you like to come in. But people don't like being counted. They're like sheep. And the husband, but what this group do, the staff, like we do, we have our meal first. And then they put the plates, they count the plates in groups of, say, 25. When the meal's gone through, they count what's left, so they know how many meals went out. The meals aren't very big. So guys like some of you great big hulking brutes, you come in first, grab your plate, go through, eat your meal quick, get on the end of the line and come through for seconds. If you have returns in that camp, you pay for a whole meal. Now, they didn't know they were doing this, and they didn't know the teenagers were doing it. They got a bill for some ridiculous amount at the end of camp. I'm talking about, $350, $400. And they said, well, for Saturday lunch you had, $250. I said, we didn't. We've only got 150 here. Well, we put out 200 and they all went. So check your hidden costs when you're hiring a campsite you don't know about. And be a little bit fussy. I know the people that are fussy with me and they come out, a committee will come two or three times and they're fussy, they get good service. Look down here, bookshop. Now, I was surprised at John's, because I've got to know John, I realise he's a gracious guy. I wouldn't be as gracious as him. But we had a men's conference there, and the men took their own bookshop. To me, that is terribly rude. I mean, this is on tape, so whoever hears it, sorry if you're upset. You've got to forgive me, whoever you are, and you shouldn't be upset, you should be more Christian. I was amazed at your graciousness. Now, we'll say to groups, they say, well, look, we'd like to bring some of our own books that you don't stock. We say, it's fine. But we want you to understand that our bookshop will be open. We do not allow groups to bring their own canteen. We say, they say, well, we'd like to bring our own canteen. Okay, fine. You may bring your own canteen. You bring your own canteen, you pay for the sports gear. Because the canteen pays for our sports gear. The money we make on the canteen is just about balances. But, oh, we make a little bit more on the canteen, actually. So I said, what do you mean? So I said, well, if you want the hockey gear, now what would you want? Okay, the go-karts, weekend group, that's $10 an hour. So you just slap $3 on it. And archery, you want archery? Okay, well, it's $2 now. Of course, we don't charge for broken arrows. But we charge for broken arrows. I mean, I don't say we don't charge you if you don't. But I say, well, of course, if you break arrows, you lose those. If you just take it the normal way, of course, any breakages are on us for arrows. You want the slug guns? Okay, well, that's $5 now plus the slugs. And he suddenly finds he's got a whopping great big bill. He doesn't realize the privilege he's getting. Go-karts free, BMX bikes free, fire engine free, jigger free, horses free, shooting free, archery free, abseiling free, tennis free, croquet free, all this free. Now, you're getting that all part of the deal. And we're happy to have it. But if you're going to bring your own canteen, our canteen offsets our sports gear. So over to you. If you bring your own canteen, you pay for sports gear. The guy says, well, that's lousy. Well, I think it's lousy too. You have to talk to that committee. Was marvellous having a committee, you see, because they can never meet the committee. Fantastic. Let's just finish this. We'll just get down to plan, then we're going to have a drink. Adventure bound camps, just a few quick things. Qualified leaders, if you're going tramping or canoeing, you must have qualified. If you're doing canoeing, for instance, lots of rules simply about canoeing, just obvious ones. Nobody wears a sheath knife. Little kids, you know, canoeing, out in the box. And they've got their little belt and a sheath knife stuck in here, you see. We don't allow knives anyway, but when that guy tips over, the sheath knife will catch under the combing of his boat and he won't get out, he'll drown. One kid less. Okay, so you've got 250 kids. Who minds if they lose one? The parents mind. Alright, and little kids in the boat, he's scared stiff, so we can kids out. So we've got little Bradley in his boat scene, there's a leader at that guy here. We say, you ready, son? He's just got his paddle, and we tip him up in water about this deep, and he dips up, and he just fights, you just slide out, he's not nervous. Once you're not nervous to get out, you're not nervous. But if you're scared, if I got trapped in here, and then when we've all canned out, we've learnt to do it, then we raft up. And so you're upside down, we've got you out, and all the boats raft up, and they teach the guy how to tip the boat over, get the water out, tip it back, raft up together. He gets in from the back of the boat, slides in, teach them to do that. But you've got to have people that know what they're doing. You're in tramping. Know what you're doing. Know what you, when you're belaying, abseiling. Don't go on a camp you've got no experience with, obviously. So, qualified leaders, safe equipment, a proven route, know the route. We had with some of our youth groups, we've had some tragedies over the years of groups going for a hike in the bush and getting lost overnight. And I was involved. I wasn't with the group, but I was brought in afterwards. And some of those kids, 6 months later, were still having nightmares. They were just in silk shirts and just ordinary just shirts and shorts and going out for a little stroll, and the clown got them lost. No food, no sustenance, nothing, just they found a stream, fortunately. Nothing at all. They didn't know in New Zealand you cannot starve in the bush. You know, punga vines and all that, the silver ferns, all those, you can eat them. It tastes like wet cardboard that someone spat on, but still, you can eat them. And there are certain roots you can eat. You can also kill yourself in 3 years or less and very quickly. But this guy didn't know that. He had no experience. He had 50 kids, little kids, out all night, found them the next day at 3 o'clock. They were just an absolute mess. And 6 months later, that's why I was involved, and I said, look, I think we need, you know, real spiritual counsel here with these kids. You just can't say you've got to get over it. Jesus loves you. That little kid was still having nightmares about that terrifying night in the bush. No tent, no cover, sitting there freezing cold all through the night. Now that leader was an idiot. He went on a route he knew nothing about. Did not know the route, thought he did. The man was a clown. Hypothermia is a real problem with us. We, in the middle of January, we've got some hills behind us. They're not really high, they're just hills. And I said to all the kids, you all put jackets on. Everybody put a line them all up, and they've all got their coats. And you put your coats in the sack here, I'll carry the coats up, but you're putting your coat in. Two little idiots. They had their coats, we checked them, and when they were walking by, I left the leader to do it, he wasn't paying attention, he was talking to somebody else, these two little kids whipped off, threw their coats back in their cabin, jumped into the vehicle, taped them up, we went up there, got right up January, hot month, just before the top, a cloud came over and it poured with rain. I just told everybody, put your coats on, it's so heavy, because all told me, you're an idiot, won't rain, and you know, it's summer and we don't need coats, pour with rain. I think God just sent it. Found these two little kids sitting under a bush, and of course they got wet, we were very high, wind came in, they were cold, and they began to suffer from hypothermia, which is very, very serious. And we had to get them down very, very quickly and do all the right things. Now, that was my fault. I delegated the job, but remember with delegation, always inspect what you expect. And I didn't inspect what I expected, and I nearly had two kids that died on me. And it only happens once, and you don't make that mistake again. Now, we weren't really in any danger, really, because there was a track all the way down, and we just, one of us had to run down as we did, and got a four-wheel drive and just shoved them in and brought them back and did all the right things. All right, so proven route, adequate provisions, first aid, so the provisions, what you do, what I do if I'm going on a canoe challenge, you're standing here at the wharf, you've got a box here of provisions, you put up a little tarpaulin in there, the provisions come out there and they're checked, and then we put the box here and they go back and they're doubly checked. You get stuck on a canoe camp and you haven't got what you need, cheese, and for canoe camp we will say little rusks because you can throw them to each other in the boats and they float. Alright, and they're nice. And they've got a few teeth. First aid, somebody with a knowledge of first aid, mouth to mouth at least, you know, rescue breathing and so on. Someone's got to know how to do that, no matter where you are, and a link with home base. Transport, cost, availability, just one word there because I'm in a hurry. Safety, if you're using private transport, safety. And what I do, line the cars up, okay, we're going here, you're in front, you know the speed limit, not over 50 miles an hour, I'm sorry, that's the law. And that's the order, and when we arrive where we're going, we arrive in the order we left. If anybody, and I would do this in the leaders' meeting beforehand too, and if you people muck the system up, you know, you'll go down. But don't be an idiot, because you just, you know, an accident. We had four young people killed in one of our assemblies in the middle of last year. A Saturday night, and they were being idiots, tearing along, and a whole lot of them killed. You know, four of your, imagine four of your young people in your, the church that you can think of. Super kids, nice kids, speeding and racing, and they were killed. It was a tremendous tragedy. My word it was. And that youth leader, he will never get over it. You know, you get forgiven, you learn to live with it, but you don't get over it. So watch it. How are you going to work your follow-up? You know, how, who, material, cost, regularity, and that should be duration. The typist couldn't read my writing, which is understandable, and she was too spiritual. Yeah, how long are you going to keep the follow-up for? So that's duration. Always have a debriefing session. Did we get there? And arrange a time of thanksgiving. And once again, apologizing to say that what we do at the end of a camp and our last leaders' morning, the end of the morning, we do two things. We go through our leaders' meeting for breakup. They've got a list for, I'll just put that word down here. And they have a list of the breakup. He's on transport. This person's on the camp, you know, opening the morning tea for parents bringing their kids in, morning tea for parents taking their kids away. People on the drive, people on organizing traffic coming in, and people everywhere, people just walking around the van looking intelligent, people carrying people's suitcases, people checking out the toilets, people checking out the cabins, so they're all checked and spotless, and everybody's got a job. All right, but so we do that, so everybody knows when the leaders meeting is finished, then we have a Lord's Supper, which is very brief, and then we have a time of it, and I say to folks, hands up all those of you that had an aim. You had an aim? Good, you have an aim. Yeah, a lot of you had aims. Hands up those of you who reached some of your aims. They get a real thrill. Yeah, I had some aims on stuff and I reached them. So right, well, let's get down, let's thank the Lord, and so we have a time of thanksgiving. Always report back to your off-site supporters. Somebody sent you a sheep, somebody sent you a beast, somebody sent you a whole lot of bottled tomatoes. Scribble them a little note. We had, you know, whatever it was, 75 kids in camp, three of them were saved, four came back to the Lord, and those tomatoes were fantastic. You know, you'll get tomatoes next time too. You know, in the Lord's work, you never turn down anything. You know, whatever people offer, because they'll never offer it again. You always make sure you thank them and write them out.